So the lightning protection, as I said, should be with the heaviest conductors possible, as close to the antenna as possible, and getting to the ground as quick as possible. Now, the other idea, a counterpoise, is what makes up the other half of the antenna. When you put up a quarter wave vertical, okay, the counterpoise completes the other half of the antenna. It makes it appear like it is a half-wave dipole, like it is an underfed half-wave dipole. When you put up a quarter-wave vertical, all of those radials that you put on there are the counterpoise, which causes it to appear like, to make up the part of the antenna you essentially don't have. So I don't want to confuse counterpoise with actual, now, RF grounding of your transceiver or whatever. Go ahead.
Question.
Yep. I would like to also present Kodal argument to the statement of Dr. Roy. He said a lightning doesn't have a frequency.
Wesley, we're kind of going into blue sky here for a moment. Let the guy ask his question. The big problem is we're discussing apples and oranges, and unfortunately, amateur radio decided to name apples and oranges, both of them apples. So ground means a whole bunch of different things depending upon what you're talking about, and we're kind of falling all over the meaning of the word. When the MFJ 931 was mentioned, it's just an artificial counterpoise, not really an artificial ground. It serves a purpose that has nothing to do with lightning protection or anything else. It's simply a substitute for a counterpoise for an unbalanced antenna. Unbalanced antennas need counterpoises to balance them. Balanced antennas do not. Anyway, the gentleman said he had a question. I think we should let him ask his question.
Kitty 2 UAH. Thanks, Roy. The question was, then, listening to some of the comments, I believe, by the gentleman, Jim, maybe having an antenna like that in the attic isn't even such a great idea to begin with, because it sounds like if there were a lightning strike, it would hit the antenna, which is already inside the house, and then have to find its way out back to the ground. So am I correct in saying that probably indoor antennas are not a great idea to begin with from a safety point of view? Back to the next.
Well, all things being equal, it's functionally and safety better off to have it outside than inside. A lot of people have inside antennas. You also have to factor into what are the probabilities of you getting a lightning strike. It has to do with the topology and the weather patterns and your elevation. If you are the tallest house within a mile, maybe, and you're sitting on a hill, and it's a lightning storm neighborhood, yes, that would introduce a little bit more of a hazard. If you are anything like me, and I haven't seen a lightning bolt strike anyone in the neighborhood since I was a kid, so the risks, again, are more than zero, but not very much more than zero, in my humble opinion, anyway.
PhD with some conjectural answer.
Feel free to conjecture, Jim.
I say conjecture because I don't claim to be a scientist in this. I claim to be an observer of many houses burned down. And the indoor antenna thing doesn't particularly scare me. I can't tell you it's safe, but I can tell you that, like I was saying before, the lightning doesn't really care whether you have an inductor or capacitor or reactants or a gauge or your wire. It's going to find the biggest train track down. And if you have a whole house out in the rain that's wet and roofing, it doesn't care you got a little wire in the attic. It's going to hit the house and it's going to go where it's going. If you stick something 8 feet out of the top of the house that's made of copper and connected out to various things, it's going to find that first. So it's my observation and my educated guess that an internal antenna is probably much safer from lightning than something external, and its protection wouldn't need to be as high a priority. because the building itself is grabbing the electrical charge of the lightning before the antenna. So I'm stretching my knowledge here a little bit. But from what I've seen, it catches the thing up at the top, and it don't care about the details below. I hope that's helpful. It's not fully scientific, but those are my observations. Back to net. Wesley, get that back to net.
Can I make a point?
No, I do it.
Wait 1 second. I just want to respond to Jim, and then I will turn the mic over to you. This is a controlled net, so I'm the net control operator, so you have to understand the limitations. So we try to run as informal as humanly possible. But, you know, if I can't get a moment on the radio and it's my net, it's a weird net. Anyway, Jim, I would agree with you as I realize that you didn't want to just kind of bluntly make a comment. But, you know, as I also said, is it as safe as not having any conductive material any place near the top of your house? No, but is it 50% more dangerous? I don't think so. Is it 1% more dangerous? Probably not. So the big difference, again, is whether that area gets lightning strikes, whether you're the tallest building in the neighborhood, and how high the elevation of your conductive material is into the sky, bulking into the sky. So all things being equal, the risks are probably non-existent. But your mileage might vary. Okay, now, Wesley, you can make your comments about, I guess, lightning having a frequency.
No, I do A as well.
Okay. Lightning discharge emits radio frequency energy over the wide range of frequencies, so it does have a frequency and it does have a certain resonance frequency. We may talk about the resonance frequency bandwidth, and it varies, but it's between 3 kilohertz and 30 kilohertz. If your antenna is on 2 meters and your counterpoint is tuned into 2 meters and you're on the 10th floor of the building, that structure is not attractive or not that attractive. To the lightning that is oscillating from 3 kilohertz to 30 kilohertz, as it would be if you have a long wire antenna that is feeding your radio because you want to listen to the music. So that's my point. Do you agree with that or not?
Okay, I'll read you something that I just quickly Googled. As lightning is known to emit significant electromagnetic energy in the radio frequency range from below 1 hertz to nearly 300 megahertz, with a peak in the frequency spectrum near 5 to 10 kilohertz. For lightning at distances beyond 50 kilometers or so. So it's a rich mixture of harmonics. Whether there are dominant aspects of it or not, it goes from 1 to 300 million hertz.
EDH for the comments.
Well, I have 3 kilohertz to 30 kilohertz. You said 3 to 10, but the peak is about the 15. Now, your radio operates on 144 megahertz. What kind of, which harmonic is that out of 30 kilohertz or 15 kilohertz?
And why do it?
Yes. Yes, Tony, I believe.
Thanks, Roy. To sort of somewhat get off the topic of frequency, whatever frequency of lightning carries, the whole question of the indoor antenna, I'm going to be blunt, and it's not going out on a limb here. An indoor antenna is entirely 100% safe. Think of it as nothing more than an extension cord, or think of it as nothing more than the hundreds of wires that run throughout your house, because that antenna, the indoor antenna, if you run a wire in your attic, it's going back to the chassis of the radio, and the chassis of the radio is safety grounded through this third prong on the rung. It's just like any other wire in your house, be it a wall, the wires running to the wall outlet, or an extension cord, as I said, just an extension cord with nothing plugged into it, plugged into the outlet, nothing plugged into the other side of the extension cord. And the fact of the matter is that's borne out by the National Electric Code, which does not require any sort of safety grounding for indoor. asked the original question and now is concerned that it's probably not a good idea to put a wire in the attic different than the wires that are already in the attic. So that's essentially it.
Okay, thank you very much, Tony. All things being equal, I think antennas work better outdoors than indoors, but people do it, and they get a lot of use out of it. So I certainly have no particular reason why you shouldn't put it up there.
Absolutely agree. Efficiency-wise, yeah, you're downgrading it, but safety-wise, it's perfectly 100% safe.
WP2EAV.
Yes, Ed.
Just one academic point. All of that wiring in the attic will perturb the antenna pattern. But since you're just trying to get a signal out, does it really matter that it goes in slightly different directions than the theory would predict? Not really. Also, the wood frame of the house does provide some very small degree of attenuation. So basically, is it optimum? No. Is it good enough? Absolutely.
Okay, well, I'm glad we all agree on that.
Well, for another thought. A lot of attic insulation has a metallic cover. Just make sure that the antenna is over any such metallic cover on the insulation.
Yeah, that's a good point, Ed. Usually in the past I've mentioned just make sure that the roofing materials don't include some conductive material. But a lot of times these days the weatherproofing will have a foil base, so you have to be aware of that and make sure that that's not a factor in your particular situation. Otherwise, you've made yourself a Faraday cage. Okay, I think we kind of kicked this around a lot. Rocco, any other comments?
No, thank you, Roy, and thank you to everyone else in the group. I really appreciate your time. I hope it didn't take too much time. Anyway, this is KD2UAH. Back to the net. Thank you, Roy. Thank you all.
One more comment.
Okay, Wesley.
So, wrapping up then the subject, I made a statement that there is no such thing as artificial ground. You either have a ground or you don't have a ground. It's a counterpoise, and the ground is a counterpoise. Even real ground is a counterpoise. So the quality of the grounding rod is actually essential to act as a counterpoise. But I didn't hear from Dr. Roy yet why do we need the wires lying on your backyard or in the ground, acting as a counterpoise for your antenna. You have a ground, real ground. What do you need them for?
Well, the problem with that, Wesley, is that adds to a very complex discussion that probably could easily take 5 hours. In reality, you could say, why do radials? When you put radials up in the air, you can just have one radio. Or maybe if you want to, you put four or five or six. And why do I read that if you're going to put it on the ground, you need 36? Why do you need so many when you put it on the ground? And that's, again, because of life being unfortunately complicated. Not only do the radials supply contact to the ground, they also shield and block the coupling of the RF into the ground. So the fewer radials you have on a ground-mounted vertical, the more the RF is going to get soaked into the ground and the less the efficiency of your antenna. So the 36-plus radials are blocking some of the absorption and acting as a reflector for the RF. It's offering a kind of the other end of the seesaw, so you're balancing the quarter wave with another conductor, and you're applying the energy more towards the sky than towards the ground, where it'll just get sucked up and turned into heat. So it's not only that you need a ground potential, but you also would like to have most of the RF not going into it.
That brings up a question, Roy. Can I be snarky?
Feel free. Be as snarky as you wish, Ed.
Imagine a vertical antenna clamped to the chimney with three radials in a classic configuration. What happens to that energy that gets passed down below the radial? You're ignoring that. Doesn't that hit the earth and get absorbed too?
Much less gets absorbed. The coupling, well, you know, I mean, what do you think is the impedance between, say, a vertical that's one quarter of an inch above wet soil and something that's 30 feet above ground? You'll get ground coupling, I will agree with you. But in the ground current is going to be a fraction of that caused by putting your vertical on the proper ground.
I understand your point. I'm not 100% sure I really can wrap my mind completely around that. But I will tell you the following. One reason to answer Wesley's question, if you have a sandy soil, it's not a ground. Whereas if you have, you know, a very high water table and the soil is, you know, very conductive with all the water in it, then you really don't need the radials quite so much.
To a degree, but again, you don't want it all getting soaked up into the ground. You want it to reflect back. And it just depends upon the type of ground that you have. If you have a very good ground, if you have water, say, you get a lot of that reflection off the surface as well. When you're doing antenna simulation, one of the important settings that you should set is the quality of the ground that you're working on there. You can't change the way that antennas work significantly. So, you know, NEC and the other type of simulators have a laundry list of different grades of excellent, poor, and intermediate soil that supplies a ground of differing quality.
I think we're saying the same thing from different perspectives.
Yep.
Want to hear an interesting grounding story?
Certainly.
It is customary to ground your rig to a cold water pipe. Here is the problem. The electrical ground coming into your house through the circuit breaker panel originates at the transformer where the ground terminal is hit into a ground rod. Water paint pipe basically a separate ground rod, and you can very easily have a differential voltage and current and thus get currents flowing through the water pipes. Cases where you have the two of them tied together, such as grounding a rig for a water pipe and, you know, through the third prong on the plug. And I once had a problem where I was getting currents through the water pipes, which were apparently what was causing them to degrade. And it turned out I had a dishwasher with a copper water feed that was tying the third conductor of the ground to the copper, you know, cold water pipes. And it was actually causing currents on the order of an amp or two flowing through the house piping.
Okay, I mean, unfortunately, again, the misconception of ground potential, some people, I guess, honestly believe that there is an ultimate ground potential. Your ground potential is whatever ground you're picking for your potential. You can run two copper pipes, you know, 6 feet down, at say separate them 200 feet, and it's not weird to have a voltage potential between the two of them. You know, it depends upon the type of soil. If you have granite soil, you're not going to have that much conductivity. If you have, you know, silt and sand and right off the beach, then the chances of the differing potentials is less. But there is no absolute as far as I'm aware.
PhD.
Yes, Jim. Yes, Jim?
Sorry, I didn't hear your response. So I have another interesting ground story that will sound unlikely, but I assure you it's true. You can look it up on the Intertubes. I live in a town that has an aerodrome where they fly antique biplanes. And every once in a while they come out of the sky. And one of them happened to come out of the sky, took out an overhead electrical line, and crashed right into a friend of mine's house. And somehow the electrical connections that ensued from that put the high voltage line on the pole onto the plumbing in the house and tried to get the ground through the cold water pipe and literally melted the cold water pipe off at the foundation entrance and then began to fill the basement with water. Current electrical code asks that you ground both from a cold water pipe and through a 8-foot ground rod, copper ground rod in the soil so that whichever works better, works better. So it has a big track to go to the earth. It's a very interesting topic. I do not claim to master it. I've learned enough about it to respect it. I'm going to let it drop for 1 second to have a short finish. So, you need a big train track if you want to let the devil out of your house that came in through the roof. And totally different than RF ground, which I cannot... I mean, the difference is like the brush strokes from the fuzzy-haired guy painting clouds on the TV to the mile-long freight train traveling at top speed. You've got to give it a track to go down or it's going to go where it wants. These are multiple orders of magnitude difference in energy. And I'm very crude in my understanding of it, but I respect that difference in order of magnitude mainly, I suppose. That's what I do know. Back to that, thanks for letting me conjecture.
WD2EAD with a comment slash question.
Certainly, yes.
In a typical residential scenario, power is distributed down the poles at 2,500 volts line to ground. And one of the grounds goes to a pole page transformer is rated about 10-20 kilowatts, which goes to feed several houses. And I question whether the 230 volts that comes into your house really has enough power capacity limited by the pole transformer to actually melt the water pipes. But if the plane actually sends a 2,500 volt, 500 amp line onto it, now we're talking.
That's what happened.
Okay, thanks. Back to work.
Okay, bottom line for all this is Mother Nature can be a bitch if she feels like it. And also that if I had infinite power, I would probably change the definition for three-quarters of the things in physics because I don't like how they're named. And one of the many examples is the concept of using ground for all these different things. And it's not just the order of magnitude, it's the fact that they're all different and they're different subjects entirely. They're just bound together in our hobby and some poor person decided to use the same name for them. It's akin to the astronomers calling everything but hydrogen and helium a metal. So, words can be very, very problematic.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, I remember Dick always used to say that there are three considerations for ground. There's lightning ground, which is a subject into itself. There's AC ground, as far as 60 cycles AC is concerned. And then there's RF ground, which has to do with your antenna system and the proper grounding for that. And I could say they are all vastly different orders of magnitude of things that have to be handled. Okay.
Comment. Yes, we'll get to you in a second, Wesley. I remember Dick, may rest in peace, he used to say that. He was very, very true. And it leads to complications. It has apparently always led to complications ever since someone decided to reuse the name. Because they couldn't think of anything slightly different. so that you could differentiate between the three types of ground. But, you know, as we mentioned earlier, I would differentiate the counterpoise as well. It's not really a ground, but I'm sure people misuse it all the time. Wesley, you wanted to say something.
Since I was a young boy, either it was in Europe, either it was in the United States, I remember that I was talking to the professionals, electricians, and I was taught that the grounding for the lighting system considers DC grounding. It is called for, it is seen as a DC grounding, not AC grounding, not 50 hertz. Or 60 hertz grounding, depends where we are in the world. It's a DC grounding. When they do the measurement for the houses in Europe, they have a wire around the building going around the perimeter of the roof, and it's on the small extenders, and one wire goes down to the real ground. I'm not sure how it is in United States. But it's a DC grounding. Can anybody correct me in that?
My name is DC.
Tori?
Wes, Ed just answered you. He said lightning is considered DC, even though it does have harmonics embedded in it.
So, the previous comment wasn't very much correct, right? Because we're looking at DC grounding. We do the measurement to the grounding system as we were doing the measurement to the DC grounding, or to the DC circuit, and to exit.
I doubled, did I repeat?
Yes, Ed, I heard the interference, but unfortunately I did not hear what you said, so please repeat yourself.
Yeah, the reason DC has harmonics is it's wildly varying in amplitude from microsecond to microsecond. The flow is always in the same direction, but the amplitude is all over the place, so there's a large AC component, and as you mentioned before, of a tremendous broad band of frequencies.
I agree, Ed. Surprisingly, it's not always going in the same direction. I mean, any lightning strike doesn't alternate. But there are inverted lightning strikes out there occasionally.
The direction is still the same. The current flow itself. I do understand your point.
Okay, Wesley, you wanted to say something?
Right. So, I was trying to make a point, and I was expecting that somebody is gonna prove me wrong, which is the whole sense of the discussion. This is how I make the discussion, trying to take the opposite side, even though that sometimes I'm not right. So, we were talking about the ground, and I was making the point that if you have the antenna that is tuned to the frequency other than the peak resonance frequency of the lightning, which is 15 kilohertz, we came to the point between you and me, right? I said 3 kilohertz to 30 kilohertz, and you said that is about 10 kilohertz. Then that antenna with its counterpoise, if it's not connected to the ground, is not attractive to the lightning. Of course, nobody's going to give you insurance for it, but it's not attractive. And I never heard that it happened. So many years on the Mother Earth, I saw so many systems, and I never heard about one. And to exit. WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Talking about whoever came up with these different names, I'd like to thank the guy. The ability, the foresight to change the diagrams. You read the diagrams. I was starting out in ham radio. You look at, all the different symbols. And then they had two different ones for ground. You know, you had one for actual ground, and then you had the chassis ground. So somebody was able to at least separate that, Roy.
There's a third one also, just a simple triangle.
Oh, Okay, what's the triangle?
In some circuits, you want to isolate the ground. As you mentioned, there's the earth ground, which is a vertical line going to a horizontal line and 3 to 45-degree angle lines. There's the chassis ground, which is a vertical wire that goes through a cross wire with two successively shorter wires under it. And the third one is an upside-down equilateral triangle. It's more to differentiate between different grounds to keep them separate more than any particular allocation to different functionalities.
Very good. Interesting. Right?
Yeah, and don't they sometimes number them when they want them grouped in particular ways?
I haven't come across it, but it would make sense. The idea is some cases want to have isolated grounds. For example, if you are working on some electronics and you're involving stuff that's tied to the AC line, if you don't have complete power isolation to a transformer, you have to be very, 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 very careful to keep all of the grounds separate so you designate them on the schematic differently. And I guess if you have enough of them, you start throwing in numbers.
Comment.
Yes, Wesley?
So actually, it looks like we're coming to the conclusion that all of the measurement and all of it's important is the resistance of the ground. If the resistance of the ground is good, then it is measured as a DC circuit, which doesn't have any alternation, which means that if we want to have a good ground, we have to measure just the resistance of the ground or the resistance of the connection between ground and the road. This way we are safe. So it means that the closer we are to DC, the better ground we have. And it's important because the discharge of the lightning is about 15 kilohertz. Any antenna that is over that and far away from 15 kilohertz is more safe, if we're talking about the artificial ground, it's 2 meters is more safe, for 70 centimeters even more safe. And it doesn't matter if it's outside of the house, inside of the house. Elevation matters. Nobody's going to give you the insurance, but it looks like this is the conclusion of it. Do you agree with that?
CDH with a comment.
Yes.
I think I have it. Hold on. The idea that lightning has any kind of frequency, I don't agree with that at all. Lightning is just trying to get to ground as quickly as it can. If it sees a high piece of metal, no matter what that antenna is tuned for, and it can get to ground through that, it's going to do it. It has nothing to do with any resonant frequency of any antenna. If you have an antenna up that's cut for that, a 10 gigahertz dish that's 50, 80, 100 feet up in the air, and lightning strikes it, it's going to go down that tower to ground. It has nothing to do with any of the resonant frequencies of any of the antennas. Go ahead.
I have a problem with that. The thing is that now you're talking about the elevation. I'm talking about the resonant frequency. Your radio has a resonant circuit. You are able to hear me because you have your circuit in resonance, and it's resonating 144 megahertz. The frequency of the resonance frequency band is, with its peak, about 15 kilohertz. That is easy to be checked on the internet. Now, the closer you are to that frequency, the more attractive to the lightning that wants to find the short path on its resonant frequency is. And that's why if you have a long wire that is connected to your radio because you want to hear the music, it is even more dangerous than you have your antenna on let's say, 28 megahertz. And to a chair.
Roy, can I make a comment?
Certainly, Ed.
You do not need a direct lightning hit to cause fairly severe damage. You can get coupling over all of the frequencies. But I'm not sure where this conversation is going, but that may or may not be relevant. That when there's a nearby lightning strike, you have a tremendous spectrum of energy. That yes, if you have a resonant antenna, it will pick up more of that than just a non-resonant piece of wire. And that can do a fairly significant amount of damage. Thank God it's usually, it will not burn the house down.
That is why I was talking about the counterpoise. That's why I was claiming that the ground is not the ground. Ground, real ground is a counterpoise also. So we're talking about the resonant frequency and the resonant circuit between the sky, between the cloud and the earth. And the earth is resonating at the frequency close to the discharge of the lightning. And we have a perfect ground. There you go. You have that very much attractive discharge. But of course, point of elevation is important. Enter it here.
AC2GS. Anyway, I just want to add John KD2BD, who listens to us and communicates via the chat room, had a comment earlier on. He said some circuits employing both analog and digital circuitry have separate analog and digital ground. So thank you, John, for pointing that out as well.
VHD.
Yes, Jim.
I just want to point out an interesting thing. As much as the language and the details of this are confusing and divisive and complicated, it's a very important topic. It branches out into many kind of other avenues of house electronic equipment, electricity, safety, fishing on the beach, or having an umbrella, or it's an important topic, and the language definitely is more complicated. It should be, not enough words. I believe there's a word earthing that's also part of this. Maybe it's a European version, and I don't know if it helps or hurts, but it's a complicated topic. It's hard to discuss, but I do believe it's important, and I'm glad to be involved in the conversation. Thanks for all the input.
Yeah, certainly, Ed, and thanks, Jim. I don't think we're wasting our time with any of these topics. They're all important, although some of them are a wee bit hyper-complicated. There are some things that you could do on a radio transmission, some things you just have to take a whiteboard and draw some pretty pictures. I'm glad that we're able to do it without the whiteboard. But, Ed, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, if you have a printed circuit with mixed signals, typically, if you have a circuit board for RF, you have the ground plane. So the grounding is very low impedances between different ground points. But let's consider a digital circuit. A, you have a very high density of all kinds of different wires, so you can't afford the luxury of a new ground plane unless you're going to something like a 6-layer board. That starts to get expensive for anything but the most serious work. In most cases, you run with double-sided boards. There's no room for ground plane, and the ground leads have a definite finite peak. So you are getting voltages across different parts of the ground. Now, if you're looking for millivolt, even microvolt signals, let's say you have some kind of a sensor. Maybe you're building some kind of a medical device where you're getting in millivolt signals from a sensor taped to somebody's body. The little current-induced voltages at different points of the ground plane on a digital board can contaminate it, and that's why they would heaven and earth to keep them separated. Now, if your sensor is giving you 3-4 volt signals, then this isn't really necessary.
That was a good point.
Yeah, I agree as well. The design of printed circuit board, its multi-layered design, there's a whole bunch of YouTubes available of what people go through to get proper placement of components and how often they get things wrong.
Thank you. Talking about the lighting, what I was trying really to say is, do we take 15 kilohertz as a resonance frequency, and we take that there is no ground at all, doesn't exist. Let's say, theoretically, ground doesn't exist. The ground that we have, that we're working at, is our counterpoise. That counterpoise is perfectly matching 15 kilohertz antenna, which is the lightning path, which has a certain length. This thing is more attractive than your 10-story building that has plenty of wirings, but it doesn't match the frequency. So everything is about the resonance circuit. I was talking to few professionals, European professionals, even my old professor, but it was many years ago when he was alive, and he was just pointing. People don't understand why we have a measure the grounding system in Europe based on the DC, based on the resistance. Because the closer you are to DC, the more you are able to attenuate, not really attenuate, to discharge the lightning through that main approximate 15 kilohertz system, assuming that the Earth is giving you a perfect balance, perfect counterpoise to the 15 kilohertz. And to it here.
The H would comment.
Yes, John. So when a lightning strike or stroke is about to occur, as I understand, your cedars, which are these very faint discharges, which are like go ahead of it to trying to find ground. If they come across some object first that looks like it's a good path to ground, then immediately after the leader connects with it, then the main stroke discharges the thousands upon thousands of amperes through it. I really don't think any resonance of any kind is involved with that. All it's trying to do is find a path to ground as quickly as possible. I think if you had antennas that were tuned to different frequencies at the same height, whichever one the leader connects with first is going to be the one that's going to carry with the heavy stroke is going to follow. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, one of the big problems for this one is that physics really doesn't fully understand how lightning works. We have all kinds of interesting theories and experiments and examples, but push comes to shove, you could get some good ideas, but there's not going to be anyone sitting there telling you this is exactly how lightnings are created or formed. This is the reason why occasionally they're inverted. All this is in a book someplace. It ain't, unfortunately. So a lot of this is educated conjecture, sometimes uneducated conjecture. So there's a lot of still mysteries with lightning. And, I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, Dick kind of took lightning on, and we discussed it all and realized that we don't quite understand it.
I understand, but presenting a point of view about the link doesn't hurt. The thing is that if you were using right now antenna on 80 meters, why transmitting on your radio has 2 meters? You wouldn't be able to reach the repeater. And it doesn't matter how much power you get, it just would eventually damage your transmitter that's been dropped. If you ask yourself the question, 1 megahertz.
It is heard up. It is because.
Half megahertz and how 100. Just go down. And see what the wavelength do we have, and then you measure the distance between the earth and the ground. Sometimes you are very much surprised that you are in the building on the fourth floor or the fifth floor, but the lightning didn't hit the building. The lightning hit the tree. And the tree is much smaller and is next to the house. Why is that happening? Okay, so if you measure the distance between the earth and the cloud, that is your vertical dipole. Now, if the ground is matching the counterpoise, acting as a counterpoise, it is matching the resonant frequency for, let's say, 15 kilohertz, which is the main frequency of it, plus and minus, then we may say, okay, this is a perfect pattern, but why is this is not the fixed frequency? Why do we have a bandwidth of it? Because we have a bottom of the cloud and the top of the cloud, and then we have a cloud over the cloud. And when the discharge happens, it sometimes strikes in a very much complicated pattern. And that's why we have that bandwidth. That's why we don't have that frequency. But eventually, the idea that the closer we are to the frequency of resonance, or close to the frequency of the resonance of the light discharge, the more probability it is that it's going to hit. So that's what I say. Did you hear that somebody is transmitting on 2 meters and in his car, and the lightning hit it? I didn't. And to exist.
PhD, comment for Wesley.
Yes, Jim.
Wesley, question. Earlier in the beginning of the net, we had a conversation having to do with the realities of actual experimentation versus theoretical modeling. And it was pretty much clear that while the theoretical modeling was useful, reality won out. And you have to consider the fact that the model is just a model and it may or may not be right. You seem to be forwarding the idea that reality is relevant and the modeling is most appropriate to consider reality when reality says something different. Consider that perspective, please. Back to net.
Okay. You're absolutely right. I completely agree with you. I'm projecting the argument in hope that somebody's gonna squash it, that somebody's gonna make it invalid. That's what is the sense of the discussion. If everybody says yes, as I said one time on the technet, there is a communist. Doesn't do any good. It has to be a difference of opinion, and that the opinion that is more prevalent makes the things right. That's why we have a modeling, and then we have a practice with the modeling. But if the modeling wasn't valid, that we wouldn't do it. We just go to the practice. So absolutely agree with you. I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm just trying to present the point which may have the argumentation that is much, much stronger and prove it wrong, which is nothing wrong with that. Just prove me wrong. That's okay. Enter again, Dr. Roy.
KC2GS. So the problem is that there are topics of discussion that are much better understood by specialists. This is not one. You know, someone mentioned the streamers. If you take a very close look at a lightning strike, it is not a single bolt of ionizing current going down the line. It is these variegations that jump from one point to another point to another point and branch along the way. So you're kind of simplifying this as a conductor, where it's not really a fundamentally simple conductor. It's a variegated somewhat fractal type of ion trail that we're talking about. And so, you know, science itself has a lot of questions about lightning. So if it was something simple that everyone sort of knew, like buoyancy, then, yeah, you're going to get people who either say, yes, you're right, or no, you're wrong, and this is the reason. But if you're going to take something esoteric that, unfortunately, lightning includes, you're going to get a bunch of people saying, I don't know.
82
NSJ, stand by. Yes, Sam. Long time no here. I hope you're doing well, Sam.
Thank you, Roy. And everybody on the net, thank you. Thank you for remembering me. I'm always here. Always. But I just try to listen and learn as much as I can. Okay. You're right, Roy. The other guys that mentioned about lightning, right to our point. Gotta be in it to tell I was in it. I was at Fort Dix, New Jersey. Lightning hit our radio station and it went through two buildings, Roy. Two wires under the ground. Burnt the floor, burnt the side of one building, and they demolished our radio system. Killed transformers, everything. But before this is open base, there's nothing, you know, for lightning to hit, you know, like a tree or something, or cut you off. It was a direct hit, Roy. Man, I live, and fire people come, and I'm just saying this to say, you can't judge lightning, you can't do nothing with lightning, my mother nature, water, fire, that's to live with it. Roy, this thing hit, boy, when I was in the state company, and company to decompose, it's a big conductor, everything. So I'm just saying that to say, there's no answer. Okay, you can try to protect yourself and breath as well. You do have to learn about it, especially chocolate, but there's no answer to it. Answer, say it. I'm telling you, my mother nature is, she asked for a question or an answer. Yeah, and you do it every day.
Well, thank you for adding that, Sam. I mean, part of the scientific method is we start not knowing anything, and we work towards trying to understand and model, and then seeing if the model predicts the proper response. Earlier, Wes might have indicated that science has some degree of democracy. You don't vote for the laws of thermodynamics. You can try and disprove them, and if you can demonstrate a situation where they are falsifiable, you can do that. But it's pointless to take a vote. Lightning, though, is a scary thing. Nature is very, 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 very powerful, and you know there's a good reason why the Greeks chose the king of all their gods, Zeus, as the lightning bearer. So they appreciated the power of the lightning bolt.
Actually you touched the waves in plasma. You said, well, this is not necessarily conductor. But waves in plasma, there is a whole science about it. Surface plasma, polaritons. There was the behavior of wave in plasma, the longitudinal component of the wave in plasma, and the path between the cloud and the air is the plasma. It's a conductor. I say it's not really a conductor. Yes, it is a conductor, because otherwise you wouldn't have a discharge. And once you have ionization, the major charge release, not DC, is AC, doesn't come at very much of the beginning of ionization. It comes when that ionization is already established. And because you have a high current, due to the high current, during the discharge you get more ionization and better quality of the conductor. Do you agree with that?
Yes, the Yankee Echo, unfortunately not getting your entire call sign. Could you repeat your call sign, sir, please? Okay, what's your first name? Okay, Vinny, stand by for a second. Wesley, if we start to talk about plasma, talk about blue sky. Yes, if a plasma is a conductive material, it is not a simple conductive material. It is not the same thing as a wire. It is kind of self-renewing and extending. It's a lot more complicated than a wire antenna is. And I think we're a little too late into the day to start to discuss the physics of plasma. Now, that's already the fourth state of matter.
Yes, I agree with you. I completely agree with you. Because then we're going to start about the existence of plasma, the particle collision rather to be less than plasma oscillation frequency. Then we go to collective interactions, control the plasma gas, depend on the electric magnetic field effects, and so on. Yes, of course. It's too late. But if you don't mind, we can sometime in the future touch that subject, because we went here to the certain very valid confusion to the ham radio community about the grounding, about the counterpoise, and about the lightning. And to XGS.
Okay, for some other night we can discuss plasma if it's apropos. Thankfully, since we gave up on spark gap generators, haven't been a lot of amateur radios working with plasma generators.
Of course. There are so many. It's a pressure, it's a temperature, it's a velocity of vibration, is the electromagnetic wave that is created in that time that propagate even in a different environment, because it's not really, we don't deal really with air. We have ionized creature that is a plasma, and that's how we should look at the lightning. But at the end of it, everybody don't want to have a lightning, and understanding lightning is just critical. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Wesley. So, Vinny, you wanted to say something? You're full quieting to the repeater, but you probably can juice up the preamp on your microphone, because your audio is very, very, very low. But there's no noise in the background. It's just that it sounds like you're whispering at us.
It sounds like he's talking through a can. How's this? Any better?
Yes, that is a lot better. It went up at least 10 decibels.
All right, well, that goes to reality. This is an indoor antenna. It's actually a mobile antenna that's from a car. I put on aerials on the inside, second floor, and I'm able to get out. So, and I'm not worried about lightning per se. And I'll let the channel go. But when we talk about frequencies, everything has a frequency. Even human beings have frequencies. Like the poor individuals a few months ago that were just the two couple that were in Washington, D.C. Touring, and they got hit by lightning or thereabouts. But anyway, I'll stand to the side. Over.
Okay, Betty, you do that. As far as indoor antennas, there are some people, if you can't do it outdoor, try it indoor. There's more complicating problems possible with an indoor. My home is plastered, was plastered back in 1959 or so, so it has no plasterboards. They use the old method of running chicken wire on the 2x4s and then smearing plaster on the chicken wire. So my house is somewhat of a Faraday cage. If I try to put up an antenna inside my house, it's not terribly effective. But other people have other structural aspects to their houses, and they can do very well. I know people who put a mag mount on their refrigerator and get out on repeaters. It's certainly doable. I know people who staple dipoles to a side of a wall and they get through. I wouldn't want to stand very close to the antenna when I was doing that, but Otherwise, if your home is capable of passing RF, then yes, for sure, it's an option.
Can I have one more question about? Just the last question, Dr. Ray. Could you answer the question?